The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson. Today's going to be a mailbag episode, and my plan is to do one of these last Wednesday of every month for the rest of the season. So you guys gave me honestly more questions than I could handle, but that's great. I might not get to every single one that was submitted, especially if it didn't have sort of a prospect angle to it, but really appreciate all of the responses and questions that you guys sent in. And there was a lot of overlap, so I might not mention you by name, but a lot of people asked about some similar prospects. So I should be able to get to most of the people that you guys asked about. I'm also going to try something new. I'm going to release basically a transcript of this, for lack of a better word, as an article. And so if you're a subscriber to the site, you can go in and check that out, and you can kind of get the spellings on the names of some of these guys, see how many of them are rostered or available in your leagues and stuff like that, and just kind of use that as a reference. If you don't have a subscription, you can go to rotowire.com/try for a free trial without giving us a credit card. So I think this is going to be a pretty long one. My document is 13 pages long here, so feel free to listen on like 1.1 or 1.2 speed. But let's just kick things off with the first question from Adam Balin. He wants to know, Luis Matos or Marco Luciano, compare their ceilings and floors. Their ceilings and floors is kind of why I've been on Matos over Luciano for a while. I think of Matos's ceiling as kind of a Bo Bichette in the outfield type of player, a true five category guy. The hit tool is really what's been attractive to me about Matos, sort of the way it was as with Bichette when he was in the lower levels of the minors. And then obviously he's shown some speed. I think there's developing power there. If things didn't work out quite like that, maybe he's a Manny Margot type of guy. Marco Luciano, on the other hand, I think you're talking about either a three category guy or a four category guy. If he hits a ceiling, maybe he could be Eloy Jimenez at shortstop. His floor, or kind of like an outcome that people might not be that satisfied with, would be sort of a Paul DeJong type of career. But he's going to hit for power. He's going to play shortstop. But the rest of it's kind of TBD. He's just not going to help you in stolen bases. So that's where Matos has the edge over Luciano. Dan also had a Luciano question. He wants to know if I'm reading much into his early success. This is kind of a best case start to the season for Luciano back at high A. It's a level that he obviously struggled at significantly last season, but he's a streaky hitter. He's definitely trending back towards, say, the top 20, if he's not already there. But let's see where he's at in a month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks from now. I'm not fully back in on him being like a top 10 guy yet or anything like that, for the reasons I kind of alluded to. Benny Dykstra wants to know, when is Tristan Casas getting the call? And is he a top 20 first baseman when he gets it? I had a lot of questions about Tristan Casas. I think he's probably the most asked about prospect out there right now because he's a top 10-ish prospect and he's at AAA and he's producing. So you have dynasty people asking about him, redraft people asking about him. You know, Bobby Dalbec kind of looms large here. He's off to a really rough start and he obviously is a poor defender. So if that continues, I mean, I think this organization has much more faith in Casas long-term than Dalbec, and they have designs on winning this year. So if Dalbec keeps struggling, maybe we see Casas in a couple weeks. My initial guess was that he would be up in late June or early July. So that would be quite a sped up debut, but you know, he's doing exactly what you'd want him to do at AAA right now. Casas, that is. So it wouldn't be that surprising to me if we got a call up from Casas here before the end of May, especially if Dalbec keeps struggling. So I think it is stashing season with Casas, especially in OBP leagues. And then in terms of his upside, once he's up, you know, I think he could reasonably perform kind of like Brandon Belt. He could also show significant growing pains. There's better prospects than Tristan Casas who have shown those growing pains this year. So you shouldn't assume that, you know, once Casas is up, he's just going to be awesome for you. But he does have some similarities to, I remember the year that Yordan Alvarez came up. I had him on my Tout Wars draft and hold bench, and that was just like a shot of adrenaline to the roster, plugging him in, and it was just a fun ride. I could see the same thing happening this year with Casas. I've got him in Tout Wars. I've got him in AL Labor. Lots of draft and hold. So there is a slight chance that Casas could be a big time difference maker down the stretch, and that's especially appealing just given the fact that he's a first baseman, and that's a tough position to find competent help from off the waiver wire. Eric Samulski, who I was on a podcast with recently, he wants to know, with Leody Taveras and Bubba Thompson off to strong starts, could we see either get a chance in Houston or in Texas this season? Thompson has 19 strikeouts and zero walks at AAA, so I don't think he's very relevant for, you know, redraft leagues. He might get the call, but he's not on the 40-man roster. I think he would just really, really struggle against big league pitching. There's kind of a common theme over the past year plus is just in order for us to have any sort of faith in a guy going from AAA to the majors and having success against big league pitching, They not only need to just be tearing the cover off the ball at AAA, but really you kind of want to see more walks and strikeouts, or at least something close to that, especially if they're 23, 24. I think Thompson's 23. With Taveras, he like Thompson, hasn't really been walking a ton. He's at least got more than zero walks. But at least for Taveras, he's not striking out a ton. He is on the 40-man roster. He's someone who I think Texas might still hope is in their long-term plans. So I think we would see him before Thompson. I wouldn't expect him to hit for a high average, but he'd be capable of maybe hits like 235, which wouldn't kill you, and he steals some bases. And, you know, I think he could be relevant in deeper leagues. Brockness Monster wants to know about Nick Prado. Is he stuck behind Vinny Pascantino? Got a lot of questions about this Royals first base situation as well. You know, Prado is on the 40-man roster. He's a better defensive first baseman than Pascantino. And, you know, the Royals aren't the smartest organization, but really anyone can see that Pascantino is the only one of these two who could possibly have success in the majors right now, just given the way that they're performing. Pascantino's stat line at AAA, basically exactly what you would hope a slugger like him would be doing there in order for us to have any faith in them having success against big league pitching. Whereas Prado, if you're striking out 35% of the time at AAA, regardless of how old you are, you're going to struggle to hit above the Mendoza line against big league pitching. I think it's worth noting that Carlos Santana has shown some signs of life over the past few days. So I don't think this is imminent, especially with Pasquantino not on the 40-man roster, but it's, you know, a deeper league, certainly AL only. I think it is maybe stashing season with Pasquantino. Todd D wants to know the ETA on Juan Yepez. He's the type of guy, like, he's not a high-end prospect. I could see him being brought up for like a doubleheader or something, or just a couple weeks as just to add some depth off the bench and then getting sent back down. I don't think he's got much impact potential this season. I mean, for a first baseman slash DH like him, you'd want him to just be kicking the door down, and he's not really doing that. Bob May, do you think James Wood is the real deal? Wood has just blown away my expectations so far this season. A lot of prospects have struggled making the jump from complex ball to single A, so that makes it even more impressive. And this is actually something I was sort of talking with Jesse Roach a couple days ago about. We've talked a lot about the jump from AAA to the big leagues being just bigger than it's ever been. It's just such a change in terms of the caliber of pitching you're facing. But I think the jump from complex ball to low A, and it's intuitive, but it's kind of under discussed how massive that has gotten and how challenging it is to have success from going from the complex level to low A, especially if you're a 18 or 19 year old hitter. It's obvious. I mean, like, there's no Pioneer League anymore. There's no Appy League. Those short season leagues don't really exist. Those kind of bridges from complex ball to low A. Now you're just going straight from complex ball to low A, and you're getting pitchers at low A who can just throw a whole bag of tricks at you that you're just not going to see at the complex level. Guys that can confidently spin breaking balls that they can land for strikes. Guys with changeups. I mean, you're not gonna see many changeups in the complex level. So guys are going to really be able to attack hitters who have some issues with their approach or some holes in their swing. And so, kind of back to James Wood, very, very impressive that he has not only had success there, but I mean, he just looks like he's the one who is too much for these pitchers to handle at that level. So couldn't have asked for a better start from him. Dr. Octagon Cards wants to know level of concern about Reggie Preciado. Very, very significant concerns about Preciado. Just a really, really bad rank by me to push him up where I had him last summer. Probably one of my worst rankings I've done in recent years, pushing him as high as I did. I think he's a drop in leagues where like 200 prospects are rostered. It would have to be a league where you're rostering, 300 plus prospects for me to be patient with Preciado. He just, and I talked with someone who saw him in person recently, and he just said he looked terrible. And you could just see that in the numbers, right? I mean, he's striking out almost 50% of the time. Doesn't mean that he's never going to amount to anything, but I don't think you got to be patient with him. He's 3+ years away. No real signs of him kind of actualizing as an offensive player the way that I sort of hoped he would. John wants to know, what is Jordan Groshans' major league position going to be? Why do teams like to sign players like Albert Pujols to block guys like Juan Yepez? And then he also asked, is Sedane Rafaela Mookie Betts 2.0? Groshans is a guy that's, I think, capable of playing third base is probably his best position long term. But he kind of came up as a shortstop, we know that he's not going to profile at either of those positions as long as Bo Bichette and Matt Chapman are healthy. But he could play second base, and I think he could fill in at on the left side of the infield if those guys are ever hurt. And so second base is a spot where he could absolutely hang it, and maybe even a corner outfield spot. And he might be used as trade bait this summer. I mean, the Blue Jays are all in on winning right now, and they've traded a lot of prospects away. I think that they knew that Groshans could really improve his stock this season, so maybe it didn't make sense to them to trade him back when they traded Austin Martin. As for Yepez and Pujols, like, Yepez just isn't a good enough real life prospect to worry about blocking. He's not going to add any value defensively. Maybe he has like a 3 or 4 year run as a guy who's hitting 25, 28 homers and getting on base at like a 330 clip as your DH or your first baseman, or maybe even carves out like a Jesus Aguilar type of career. But those aren't guys that you should worry about blocking. Those are guys where it's like best case scenario, they're a 1.5 or 2 win player. So just every org has someone who's kind of like Juan Yepez. So you don't worry about that. Now, should they have brought in Albert Pujols? I probably wouldn't have done that. But as for Rafaela, Betts, I think it's underrated how good of a statistical prospect Mookie Betts was. And this was kind of before prospecting was such a big deal online and for fantasy. It was still basically, just Baseball America, Baseball Prospectus, kind of ranking prospects, Keith Law. So you didn't have people kind of catching on as quickly on guys like Mookie Betts who didn't have that sort of pedigree. But if you go back and look at what Mookie Betts did in the minor leagues, I mean, just absolutely elite. Was walking more than he struck out at several stops while being young for the level. Really nice batted ball profile. I think Rafaela is arguably the top pop-up prospect of the year. He's a guy that people knew about coming into the year, but not a guy who I had ranked as a top 400 prospect. That said, I think I'd value him as a borderline top 100 prospect right now. Anthony Stoez wants to know if Matt Brash's K to walk will normalize in the MLB, or does he risk being sent down? I think the scouting report on Matt Brash, which is to not swing and make him throw strikes, I think that is out. I think it took one start. He had that good first start, and teams are basically telling their guys, like, you're not going to hit his breaking ball. Make him throw his pitches for strikes. That's his weakness right now, is his command and his control. Brash is going to have to adjust back. If he can't do that, he could get sent back down. I don't think it's not panic time on Brash in dynasty leagues by any stretch. You don't see guys with his type of fastball, breaking ball combo come around very often. But it could be one of those developmental tracks for a pitching prospect where it just takes a while. Think about a guy like Robbie Ray, for instance, where he would have some big strikeout seasons, but be kind of a whip liability. It all comes together from 1 year, but maybe Brash isn't the type of pitching prospect who is just awesome as a rookie and then just kind of never looks back. I do think Nick Lodolo might be that type of pitching prospect. I would be trying to trade for Lodolo anywhere you can right now. Richard Sands wants to know, he's in a dynasty league where he's in win now mode, and who should be his highest waiver priorities. He gave a long list of guys, and he wanted to know who's going to be the first one to get to the majors. Kyle Stowers with the Orioles is someone who I think really stands out among the bunch of guys he listed. He will definitely be the first one of these players up, Richard, and I think he's the best of the bunch right now. He listed Zach Geloff, who I think is probably the highest ranked prospect of all these guys on my rankings right now. But and I like Geloff, but just given the swing and miss issues with Geloff right now, double A, even though he's performing, Stowers, you know, he looks ready. He looks ready for big league pitching. He's at triple A. The Orioles, you know, I think he'll get a shot at some point. Trader Andy, buddy of mine, wants to know how Miguel Vargas compares to Josh Jung. What's his ETA, and would he get called up ahead of Michael Bush? Got lots of questions about Michael Bush, but Vargas compares. He's kind of similar to Josh Jung, guys where you're sort of hoping that it's a plus hit tool, plus power. You know, I think it's worth noting with Vargas versus Bush, Vargas is 2 years younger. He plays three positions on the infield. He plays third base. He's played some second base. He's played first base. Bush has only played second base and DH. So Vargas is 2 years younger, but he plays more positions, and he's the one they sent to AAA, whereas they sent Bush back to AA after Bush really, you know, there was no reason necessarily to send Bush back to AA. He was great at double A last year by what you'd expect from Michael Bush. You know, Michael Bush is kind of a three true outcome type of guy. That's what he did last year at double A, and he's back there and he's just killing it. But, you know, I think Vargas is just clearly the better prospect than Bush at this point. When you factor all that stuff in, I think the Dodgers sort of tipped their hand when they signed the younger guy to AAA. And, you know, I think if Josh Jung were healthy, he would be in the majors. I think he might be having success. But by the time we get to, like, this offseason, which is probably when Jung will be back to full health, Vargas will have had all this experience at AAA. He might even have some experience in the majors. I think Vargas at that point will be more ready for big league pitching than Jung is after all the time he's missed. And so that's why I have Vargas ahead of Jung on the top 400, even though if they're both healthy right now, I think Jung would have entered the season as a top 10 prospect. Let's see. Ryan wants to know if I put out my first year player draft rankings today, where would I put Matt McClain? The first taste of pro ball seems extremely encouraging. I already had McClain ranked pretty aggressively. I had him ranked sixth for first year player drafts entering the year, but he'd be a top three guy for me at this point. You know, a couple other guys that I think have also had really impressive starts, Brady House and Henry Davis. McClain, though, I think what a big separator for him is, like, the Pirates sent Davis to high A, the Brewers sent Sal Frelick to high A, the Orioles sent Colton Cowser to high A, the Reds sent McClain to double A. And those are kind of the four top college hitters from that class. McClain was the only one sent to double A, and he's been great. And I think he's a guy who I gravitate towards these types of guys where it's, you know, power or it's speed, hit tool, defense. People question the power. I think McClain was always going to kind of beat those power expectations. So he's really exciting, I think, for fantasy. Chaz Beef wants to know any update on why Ian Lewis isn't at single A. I've heard it's not injury related, but I wouldn't expect him. I think he will be sent to an affiliate at some point here in the coming weeks. Chris Valenci wants to know my thoughts on the slow starts for some of the blue chip prospects who broke camps with their big league teams. He lists Spencer Torkelson, Bobby Witt, Julio Rodriguez, Reed Detmers. You know, Torkelson is doing about as good as I think you could hope for him to be doing. So I wouldn't worry about, I don't think this is a slow start for Torkelson. I think this is just kind of what you would hope for if you drafted Torkelson. He's not hitting for high average. Not many guys are hitting for high average right now. I think he's kind of more of a three true outcomes guy, and that's what he's doing. Julio Rodriguez, I don't care about the slash line, or like, he's going to be a star. The fact that he's stealing this many bases while struggling to get on base, like I thought I was pretty high on him in terms of the speed that he could offer, thinking that he was going to be a 15 to 20 guy, 20 steal guy over a full season. But I think now you got to look at him as a 30 steal guy, and those are rare in the first place. But when it's a blue chip hitting prospect who could be a 300 hitter with 30 plus homer power, if you go from being a 15 to 20 steal guy to a 30 steal guy, like, whoa, like that just sort of changes the whole equation on Julio. I would be trying to trade for him in dynasty leagues right now. Bobby Witt, this is kind of the worst case scenario, but not a unforeseen scenario. Thought he was getting overdrafted. I expect him to have a better month than he had in April, in May, but you know, it's not great. But I think this is in the realm of reasonable possibilities for Witt. With Detmers, I am a little concerned because the curveball and the slider are just not as dominant of pitches as they were for him last year. And that's going to have to change. Like, we got to hope that this is a sort of a small sample with him, because those were big time whiff pitches for him last year. And given his fastball, like, he needs the slider and the curveball to be getting whiffs at a high clip for the whole package to kind of work. So kind of in wait and see mode with Detmers, but there's some things you can point to that you could be concerned about with him. And then Chris also wanted to know, do I expect Adley Rutschman up by early June? I think, yeah, late May, early June, probably late May if he avoids setbacks. I think they'll give him a couple weeks at AAA and bring him up with, like, Grayson Rodriguez. Cam Anderson, the Nationals have two guys in the top 54 of your list and nobody else in the top 200. How much of that is based on the org, like me not trusting their development, versus the individual flaws of the players? With the Nats, I don't view them as a bad developmental org. This is just kind of the natural progression. Most teams aren't the Dodgers, right? Like, most teams, you don't compete for World Series for a 3 or 4 year stretch and just maintain that level of excellence with your farm system and your big league club. With most teams, you kind of empty out your farm, you compete for championships, and then it's kind of a bit of a rough time for your franchise where you're kind of restocking the farm and everything like that. So I think this is just kind of a natural way that it goes. You know, they won a World Series. Brady House has been great for them so far this year. Kyber Ruiz and Josiah Gray didn't qualify as prospects entering the year, but I think you could still sort of think of them as prospects, basically. So, you know, the Nats, they're not an org where I'm looking at them as like, oh, I'm going to downgrade these prospects because they're in the Nationals organization. This isn't the Rockies. This isn't the Royals, who we'll talk about in a second. But yeah, Nationals are fine. Cale Loken, with Jazz Chisholm's hot start, is he in the conversation for being a top 25 dynasty player? Yeah, I mean, I had him as a top 35 dynasty player coming into the year, so I would say he's definitely in that conversation for the top 25. Brent wants to know if there's any news on Misael Urbina's visa situation. Will he be joining Fort Myers anytime soon? You're not going to get an update on that until the issue is resolved, really. Kenny wants to know if Ezekiel Tovar is going to be Tim Anderson in Colorado. You know, that's a fun idea, right? Like, Tim Anderson in Colorado, sign me up. But in all seriousness, Tovar is one of the more impressive prospects in all the minors through the first, like, 3 weeks of the season. I touched on him in the article a couple weeks ago about National League assignments. And that was a really aggressive assignment to send him to Double A, especially considering he wasn't that great at High A, wasn't great in the Arizona Fall League, but they sent him to Double A and he is doing the best version of what he can do out there, and he does not look overmatched. So his stock is way up. And yeah, if he can kind of keep this up, slot in as the Rockies shortstop in a couple of years. I mean, that could be a ton of fun. Al Shearer wants to know what I make of Andrew Painter's start to the season. A big 6'7", 6'8", righty with really power stuff. Not surprising that he's overmatching low A hitters, and kind of what I touched on earlier in the show. A lot of these hitters at low A are just guys who are really getting thrown in the deep end. They just got done with complex ball and now they're at low A. It's just a different animal. And so a guy like Painter with his power stuff, that extension he's going to get on his fastball, as long as he's throwing strikes, he's just going to be dominant at that level. So I think this is one of those situations where if you got him in your first year player draft or you picked him up off waivers, you should feel great about that. But I don't think you should be rushing out trying to trade for Andrew Painter right now. Still a long road ahead with him, and we'll learn more about him when he gets to high A and double A. Ian Strada wants to know, for guys like Bryson Stott and Huascar Ulloa, what size leagues are you considering dropping them? In a redraft league, I think you could drop both of them. For player, if there's someone out there on the waiver wire who you think is going to help you win right now, no problem dropping those guys. In a dynasty league, I'd even be okay moving on from Huascar Ulloa. I went back and looked, and he peaked on my top 400 prospect rankings at 203 overall in 2018. So not a guy with like what he did last year really came out of nowhere. And maybe I should have had him ranked higher than 203 back before he graduated and stuff like that. But yeah, just a guy that I've never really been on, and he's been terrible this year, both in the majors and in the minors. So there might be someone out there who's just better than him. In a deeper dynasty league, you're probably holding both these guys. I'm kind of kicking myself for bumping Stott up my prospect rankings. I had him like in the 60s. And then after spring training, when it seemed like he was going to make the team out of camp, I bumped him up inside the top 30. Really regret that. Was not a guy that I was ever that big on. So I think you got to hold Stott in dynasty. I mean, he might only be 6 weeks away from being an everyday player, but not as good as people thought he was a month ago. Max Arterburn, which high A and double A hot starts are most believable of these five? And he lists Christian Encarnacion Strand with the Twins, Matthew Lugo with the Red Sox, Dane Rafaela with the Red Sox, Esturi Ruiz with the Padres, and Gerard Encarnacion with the Marlins. I'd rank them Rafaela, Encarnacion, Strand, Ruiz, Encarnacion, and Lugo. But they've all got promising characteristics to their starts, and they'd all be added to the top 400 if I was updating it today. And then Jeremy Hansen also had a Esturi Ruiz question. When do you buy back in on former top 100 guys like Esturi Ruiz or Calvin Mitchell? Cal Mitchell, I guess, I think is what his name is officially with the Pirates. Ruiz, he's doing something that he never really came close to before this season. He's walking more than he's striking out. But I think you got to be careful with a guy who's repeating a level like he is at double A. He's certainly got my attention. And he's not so old that we just completely throw this out. But I don't think I would put Ruiz like inside my top 200 just yet, even though he would be back on the top 400. Cal Mitchell, though, really, really impressive start from him. And he checks a ton of boxes. You can look at our hard hit data on the site for minor leaguers, and his hard hit data is elite. 41.7% hard hit data or hard hit rate at AAA. Really excellent batted ball profile, excellent plate skills. His strikeout to walk rate's almost 1-to-1. And that's a perfect team context to be in. He's not on the 40-man roster, But you look at, you know, Travis Swaggerty's off to a slow start. Might not be that long before Mitchell is up and getting a shot with the Pirates, and he could not be performing any better at AAA. So, I mean, Mitchell, I would value him as basically a top 100 prospect, top 120 at least at this point, just given the proximity and how good he started this season. First to third wants an update on Christian Hernandez with the Cubs. There's nothing really to update here. He played in the DSL last year. He's going to open in complex league this year. That's pretty much the standard procedure for a guy like that. He'll be the most exciting prospect in that league and could get to single A by the end of the year. But guys don't go from the DSL to low A almost ever. So you shouldn't have expected Hernandez to open the year in a full season ball. Gabriel Garcia wants to know, well, he says Corbin Carroll looks incredible. Are he and Robert Hassel far off in terms of skill set? Are we looking at two potential top five prospects, or are these two different caliber prospects with different caliber ceilings? The main difference between Carroll and Hassel is Carroll's speed. It's at least a grade higher than Hassel's. Usually I think you'll see Carroll as a 70 grade runner. Hassel is a 55 or 60 grade runner. But I could see Carroll being that, like, I'm already sort of in my mind thinking of Carroll as the number one overall prospect once this wave of guys graduates. And that, you know, Carroll versus Riley Green, for instance, you know, Green's hurt. He's presumably going to graduate before the end of the season, but I think you could think of Corbin Carroll and Riley Green as in similar tiers. So I'm kind of thinking of Carroll as the number one overall prospect once these guys graduate. And then Hassel, he could be a top five prospect in short order for sure. His start to the season has been extremely impressive. So yeah, I think you're talking about two blue chip prospects for sure. Dan says he's seeing a lot of crazy high strikeout rates for top hitting prospects early on. He lists Brandon Davis, Khalil Watson, Bobby Witt, Julio Rodriguez, and many others. Are these red flags, or do you write these off as guys settling in at a new level with adjustments coming? I think kind of like a orange flag with Brandon Davis and Bobby Witt. You know, not surprising. Like, if you told me before the season that this would be where those guys would be at, statistically, I wouldn't have been shocked. It's not ideal. You could have definitely seen scenarios where they were much better than this, in which case, you know, we'd be all extremely excited. But I do expect Davis and Witt to be much better over the next month than they were the first month. I have zero concerns with Julio Rodriguez, kind of as I alluded to earlier. I think he's just going to be an absolute star. With Watson, kind of a red flag. Not to say that I'm going to bump Khalil Watson like outside. I don't think I'll bump him like outside the top 50, but I mean, you never know. I mean, I did not think this was really in the profile with him. Like, I knew that he was going to have some strikeout issues as he moved up the ladder. I would not have guessed he would have struck out over 40% of the time in his first taste of, low A. So, just it kind of adds something to the profile that wasn't there coming into the year. Like, compare Khalil Watson's strikeout rate to Brady House, for instance. You know, same class, roughly the same age. House is kind of doing, from a strikeout and walk standpoint, what I expected Watson to do. David Reagan, a RotoWire contributor, wants to know, every year the Dodgers graduate top talent and other talent steps up into their top 10. Who are a couple guys in the 15 to 20 range that could vault into top five status over the next year? I think in terms of big risers that are outside the top 10, you're mostly looking on the pitching side. Maddox Bruns and Nick Nastrini from last year's draft class, both have big time stuff. You could see those guys finish the year maybe inside their top five, but I don't think they're going to graduate enough guys, honestly, over the next year for those guys to get that high. And then I think on the hitting side, you know, not outside the top 15, but I think Wilman Diaz could break out this year in complex ball. Jose Ramos is a little old for single A, but he's been impressive so far. So, I mean, he could be a guy that we're sort of talking about a year from now, kind of the way that we talk about like Miguel Vargas, maybe. Johnny Millionaire also had a Dodgers question regarding their pitching pipeline. Bobby Miller, Ryan Pepiot, and Maddox Bruns all seem to have extreme upside. Can you review their stuff and command? When do you see them debuting? Well, Bruns, you know, he's a teenager at single A. He's 3 years away at least, but he does have a very high ceiling. And he was kind of a guy that there was a ton of buzz around Bruns this spring from scouts seeing him. So he's probably going to have a green up arrow next to his name on the next update, even though he's several years away. Bobby Miller, the main thing with him, like, you know, he's a double A. I don't think he's going to get to the big leagues this year. I wouldn't rule it out, but the Dodgers just have so many arms. And with Miller, you know, like you look at his game logs, he's never really going that deep, dating back to last year, even. Just he needs to kind of get on a starter schedule, go every fifth or sixth day, go 4 to 5 innings, get that innings count up over 100. I think that's kind of the main thing with Miller this year. No one doubts the stuff with him, but can he handle a starter's workload? And then with Pepiot, I think he's just he's going to be very interesting. The stuff, like you said, I mean, stuff is really impressive, but I've sort of had him pegged as a 3-inning reliever for a while. You don't see many of those, but like he could be sort of in that like Spencer Strider mold, maybe even a Joan Duran mold with the Twins, where he's just getting a ton of strikeouts, but he just it plays better in relief because the command comes and goes, consistency comes and goes. I don't really view him as a starting pitcher long term, but of the three, he's at least a triple A. So maybe if he can kind of fix some of the command issues and become more consistent, maybe he does get a shot this year in the rotation. Landon Knack is honestly like my favorite Dodgers pitching prospect from a total package standpoint, but he's building up an extended spring training from an undisclosed injury. So he's kind of out of sight, out of mind at the moment. Another Dodgers question, Simon P, is James Outman too old for his level? Will we ever see him in the bigs or is it time to drop him? He's 25 at double A. He's got power, he's got speed, he's a really good defender. That's why he's on the 40-man roster. But you can't be that old and be at double A and struggling the way he is. So yeah, I think you could drop James Outman. He's trending to be removed from not only the top 400, but you know, who knows how long he stays on the Dodgers 40-man roster. And then Simon also wanted to know about the Pirates. They have so many scrubs on the active roster. Might we see an influx of prospects later this year? Do any catch my eye? Well, I do like Diego Castillo, who is already on the active roster. So my hope is that he just kind of gets regular playing time here for a while. I think he will start to produce. Doesn't have the highest fantasy ceiling, but I think he will start to produce. And then O'Neal Cruz, obviously, I think he's still worth a stash. He's off to a slow start, but the weather in the Midwest has just been awful. Would not hold that against him necessarily. But then, as I said earlier in the show, Cal Mitchell is really, I don't even know if you can call him a sleeper, but he's the guy that I would be keeping an eye on for a promotion. Banksy wants to know, what do you think of this trade in a Dynasty Points 10-teamer? Vlad Guerrero, Bo Bichette, Joe Adell, Nolan Gorman, Chris Bryant for Juan Soto, Rafael Devers, Ozzy Albies, and Willy Adames. I'm always kind of downgrading the prospects unless they're just elite prospects in a deal like this. And I'm not a huge Chris Bryant guy, even with the move to Coors. Give me the Soto, Devers, Albies, Adames side. You're getting four high end young big leaguers. And it's really kind of fun that Devers, Albies, and Adames all play different positions in the infield. That could be like your infield core going forward. Juan Soto, the best player to own in Dynasty. So give me that side. Todd D, who will get the first call? Max Meyer, Bobby Miller, Hayden Wesneski. Already touched on Miller. I don't even know if he's going to be up this year. The Yankees are always frustrating when it comes to promoting guys into full-time roles in the rotation. But the Marlins don't really have a need for Meyer either. I thought Craig Mish made some interesting points about Meyer a couple weeks ago on the podcast, where he was saying that they might give Braxton Garrett a look first, just given how much they've got invested in him. And Meyer might also debut out of the bullpen, maybe even as the closer. I think Wesneski and Meyer are both close to ready. Meyer probably basically is ready. I'll go Meyer, but I don't think they're going to be up any of those three on the timeline that you want them to be up, Todd, unfortunately. And then Todd also wanted to know about Roansy Contreras, with him being the best pitcher in the organization. Why is he not starting for them? And then Max Margolis also had a Roansy Contreras question. How good is he capable of being this year? Could he be something in the neighborhood of 2021, Shane McClanahan? So I think the reason why, like, the Pirates, look, they're not, it's not a talented rotation, but they're hoping that maybe two of the guys in their rotation right now can emerge as back end or maybe middle of the rotation starters for them long term. And they're not going to find anything out about those guys if they're not in the big league rotation. So I know they're not good. I do think Will Crow is pretty interesting. If they start stretching him out and giving him a starter's workload, I think that'd be pretty interesting. But I think the Pirates want to see what they have in these guys. As soon as somebody gets hurt or they pull the plug on one of them, maybe Contreras is up. I don't think his stuff is quite in that McClanahan range. I mean, McClanahan had a bunch of really good pitches. He was a lefty throwing upper 90s. Roansy Contreras is, you know, his fastball, breaking ball, changeup's okay. So I don't think he has the depth. And then McClanahan just being the lefty that's throwing upper 90s versus the righty throwing upper 90s. I don't think it's quite on that level. Matt Haas wants to know my thoughts on Trevor Larnach going forward. Seems like the approach hasn't been the same since the layoff. Yeah, I mean, he seems to kind of hit a wall after double A. He was always on the older side, struck out a lot. So not a guy that I think you have to be super patient with. In most dynasty leagues, you're holding a guy like this, especially with the playing time kind of being there right now. But I'm not overly optimistic on Trevor Larnach being a post-hype breakout. John Dobos has a few questions. Carlos Hernandez with the Royals, how does he look so far under the hood? Under the hood, over the hood, doesn't really matter. Hernandez, I dropped him in AL labor a couple weekends ago. So that, because in AL labor, you have to keep your pitchers that you got in the auction in your active roster, or you have to drop them. And I was just so worried about Hernandez that I just dropped him. I think I spent big on Paul Blackburn. And I'm not even, you know, Paul Blackburn, he could get beat up by the Giants today, but I just was terrified of Hernandez destroying my ratio. So I dropped him. The stuff and the strikeouts don't line up. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, not good catcher framing, not good development by the Royals. But either way, I mean, I think he's a guy where he could probably use a change of scenery. John also wanted to know about Taylor Ward. Is he an add in 12 teamers? Yeah, I mean, you could add Taylor Ward in any league. Any prospects in your top 50 that you're disappointed or worried about? I think like Nick Gonzalez, Dustin Harris, Bryson Stott kind of come to mind. Not terrified of the way those guys have started the season, but not in love with it. And then Cody Morris, expectations after his latest injury. With a guy like this, where it's just, you know, a 60-day DL, just got to wait until that timeline is kind of up. If he is ready to go, when they said he'd be ready to go, it doesn't seem like it's on the super serious side of shoulder injuries. From what I understand, any shoulder injury is serious, obviously, to some degree, but we could look up in mid to late June and Morris could be pitching in minor league games and could be having success and all could be forgotten. But if there's setbacks, if he's kind of, if he ramps up and then something else happens, or if he's just kind of not getting going when they said he'd start getting going, then I think you can start to worry a little bit more about Morris. Steve G says that I had Mason Winn pretty high at the end of last year and he's really picked it up. Seems like he could vault into top 20-ish prospects by the end of the year. Do you agree? And should I buy now and drop Nick Prado? I don't think top 20 is likely for Winn, but I also don't think it's a 0% chance given his tools. And yeah, in a dynasty league, I would drop Nick Prado for Mason Winn. Toolsy wants to know, he said Nolan Gorman is getting a lot of buzz. He still strikes out a lot and has defensive issues at second base. I believe he will struggle if called up. Do you agree? I do agree, Toolsy. The strikeouts are more concerning to me than the home runs are impressive for Nolan Gorman. So I think he could be a guy who struggles this year and then maybe is a sort of post-hype breakout guy next year.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, baseball is back. That's right, an entire glorious season, all 162 games, and with live events resuming, you can actually be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. Every backdoor slider, every round tripper, and every doubleheader can be experienced live, and with Vivid Seats rewards, you can start earning free tickets from your very first purchase. Just buy, collect stamps, and redeem. It's that easy. From behind the dugout to upper level, Vivid Seats has you covered for all the games that matter to you. Pro tip, buy tickets for your whole group, split the bill, and make progress towards your free ticket even faster. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, life happens live. All right, Andrew Mason. Do you think Ricky Tiedemann with the Blue Jays will be jumping into your top 400? He's pretty good so far, albeit needs to cut down on the walks. Yeah, Tiedemann definitely trending towards entering the top 400, probably the top 300, top 250, something like that. Fastball and changeup combo, that's going to give it's upper 90s fastball. Good mid-80s changeup, that's going to give hitters fits in the lower levels. Probably needs to I think his last start he wasn't really throwing the slider a ton or the curveball that much, but if one of those breaking balls emerges, he will have success in the upper levels as long as he can throw enough strikes. So, but I mean, at his age, he's ahead of schedule, even just with the fastball changeup combo. So yeah, Tiedemann trending up. And then got some Royce Lewis questions from Toolsy, Stephen P, Keith Schulte. Let's see. You know, people wanted to know, when's he going to be up? Is he playing any other positions besides shortstop? Royce Lewis versus Jose Miranda. Where are you projecting Royce Lewis to rank in your end of May update? I touched a little bit on this in last week's article about American League assignments, but Lewis is probably the best story in the minors. He's easily past Miranda if he were ever behind him. I'm not sure if I ever had Miranda ahead of Lewis, but yeah, Lewis, he's only playing shortstop right now, but he can play anywhere. And, you know, he showed in the AFL, he was playing third base, he's playing corner outfield, he could play center field if he needed to. Lewis, I can't say enough about him. Fantasy upside is through the roof. Like he could be a first round pick in fantasy. It's all about the hit tool with him, but I mean, he's going to hit for power. He's got crazy bat speed. He's going to steal bases. He's an elite athlete. He can play anywhere. So yeah, I don't think the Twins are going to rush him. You know, with a guy like this who missed a full year with an injury like that, the last thing you want to do is like interrupt this great start at AAA, bring him up to the big leagues, and then have him fall flat on his face. And then you're kind of almost back to square one. So I think they want to let him build at least a couple months, 2-3 months of big time success, AAA. And if he's still just really dominating, they could probably find a spot for him. I mean, that division's wide open, so I think he could help them. But I don't think they're going to push him super fast, just given all the time he missed last year. The problem with Miranda is he's just a really bad defender. He's like the opposite of Royce Lewis. He's a bad athlete. He doesn't really have anywhere that he's great at defensively. So while he's a pretty good hitter, yeah, it's kind of like it's like the Willie Calhoun problem. You really have to rake for a team to find room for you when you have those defensive limitations. Attempting ethics. Can you share thoughts on how for real are the crazy hot starts of young players like Emmanuel Rodriguez, Mason Wynn, Alexander Ovalles, Sidane Rafaela, Joshua Mears? What should we be looking for to find the next Juan Soto who lights up early? Well, you know, you're not going to find the next Juan Soto with someone who was like unrostered going into the year in dynasty leagues. Like Juan Soto, he did have that meteoric rise through the minors, but like he was a top 25, top 20 prospect for me heading into that year, big time pedigree on the international market. So you're not going to find the next Juan Soto, but strikeouts, walks, you're looking at that right away. Are they at a level that is challenging them? Are they repeating a level? How old are they? Like if a guy is putting up crazy numbers, but he's 23 and he's at high A, you know, that one, you got to take a little bit longer to really kind of buy in. Of all those prospects you listed, I wouldn't say any of them are for real, like in terms of what they're doing right now, but I think Mason Wynn's probably the one who I'm most excited about. I think his tools have the potential to be really loud long-term, power, speed, upside there. Rafaela is probably right behind him. Mears, you know, he's going to put up crazy power numbers in the lower levels, especially, but the strikeouts are still a big issue. You know, exit velocity only gets you so far. Like, you have to be able to make contact at a solid clip, and he's not really doing that yet. Mark Lois wants to know, he said it's reported the Reds are moving Reese Hines to the outfield due to the injuries he was dealing with last year. Is it time to cut bait in a 12-team NL only league where every team holds seven minors? I've been quite high on Reese Hines. I thought that he might be a breakout candidate this year. And I liked that move to the outfield because I was hoping that it would kind of translate into him staying healthy. But striking out almost 50% of the time. So in a league like that, you're rostering roughly 100 prospects. I'm sure you can find someone better than Reese Hines. Brothers Judd, should we be worried that the Royals coaching system-wide is so bad that it ruins prospects, both pitching but also hitting? I'm concerned. I'm especially concerned on the pitching side. They've had so many talented pitchers come up through the farm system in recent years, and really none of them have had any success, any sustained success in the big league rotation. Like, Brady Singer is probably the closest to that, and he couldn't even break camp in the rotation this year. So if I were another team, another big league team, I'd be trying to acquire these guys and see if you can kind of get the most out of them once you get them away from the Royals. But on the position player side, there's still some good developmental stories. You know, I mean, they had Vinny Pascantino. I'm still a believer in MJ Melendez. I know that the numbers haven't quite been there, but it's not like he's not pulling a Nick Prado and striking out 37% of the time. And I think they've done a good job with Kyle Isbell. So more concerned on the pitching side, but I think they're probably a bottom five developmental org at this point all around. Scott Corlander, Jason Dominguez with a shedding a tear emoji. Yeah, it's not good. Not good with Jason Dominguez. John McKechnie, buddy John McKechnie, who does a great job covering the NFL draft for us at RotoWire. He's also a Baltimore Orioles fan, and he wants to know if the John Means injury will speed up the timeline for Kyle Bradish or Grayson Rodriguez. And then if Trey Mancini gets dealt at the deadline, would either Colton Cowser or Kyle Stowers get a look? And then Tom Hodling also wants to know if Kyle Bradish will be called up before Grayson Rodriguez. Bradish has been off to an awesome start. He's a legitimate pitching prospect. And he is on the 40-man roster. Grayson is not. Now, I don't think the Orioles are not the type of team that's going to change their timeline on a guy because someone got hurt. Like, they're just so process, you know, like, but I do think like Bradish and Rodriguez were probably going to debut in May anyway. I think they would have found spots for those guys. So I would, you know, I think Bradish could beat Grayson up, maybe mid-May, like at the earliest, I would think, on Bradish, mid to late May, probably for both those guys, unless there's just, for whatever reason, just not an obvious spot in that rotation. I haven't looked at it recently, but I assume there will be obvious spots in that rotation. And then Kyle Stowers, who I touched on earlier. Yeah, I mean, Stowers is definitely going to be up this year if he stays healthy. He looks like a guy who's ready for that challenge. He's a little older, so not a sure thing, but statistically he looks like he's ready for the challenge, and they'll be able to find a spot for him. Colton Cowser is not going to be up this year, Johnny, so sorry about that. All right, let's head to another message from our sponsors. Bet against others with no fees involved. That's right, no pesky hidden fees to ruin your day. Better Edge is a social betting marketplace where there's no fee on each transaction. Better Edge is a social betting marketplace, and chances are it's legal in your state. We bring betting back to its social roots where you can like, comment, and challenge other users all within the app. Play without getting played at Better Edge. Go to betteredge.com. That's B-E-T-T-O-R-E-D-G-E.com to sign up today. All right, Mike Greer, can you touch on Daniel Espino and if he is due for a bump in your next updates? Espino is basically as good as a 21-year-old right-handed pitching prospect can possibly be, who has made three starts at Double A, throws really hard, and has never thrown 100 innings in a season. So there's no amount of hyperbole that you could say about Espino that I would take issue with. It's just, how do you choose to value that player? I think that's up to each individual. He could be the best pitcher in baseball someday. He could also just not really amount to anything due to injuries and challenges coming back from those. So how you choose to balance that risk reward profile is up to you. I think the key with a guy like this is that you acquire them in your first year player draft, and then you either ride it out or you sell high on them. You don't acquire them at this stage of the game, I don't think. Just the cost is too prohibitive. And then Jeffrey Thomas wants to know, Kyle Harrison or Taj Bradley? And then bonus, Eury Pérez or Daniel Espino? Can you rank all four careers long term? This is up there with the which prospect outside your top 150 could jump inside your top 20 type of questions. Like, rank these four super high upside pitching prospects who are over a year away from the majors, like long term. It just, there's factors. The factors that are going to determine how these four end up playing out as big leaguers are factors we don't know yet. Like, how healthy are they going to be? How is their command going to evolve over the next two or three years? Like, I don't have enough information to rank those four guys. I can tell you, I think Kyle Harrison and Daniel Espino have had the two best starts to the year of the four. Harrison has just a ridiculously high ceiling. But all these guys do. Daniel Espino, like, really any of these guys could be top five pitchers for fantasy. Taj Bradley, probably lowest of the four because his third pitch isn't quite where those other guys' third pitches are. But Bradley's fastball slider combo is just completely unfair. I mean, he's just dominating at every level he goes to right now. So Harrison, Bradley, Perez, Espino, all just total studs. All have ace upside. I don't really throw that around very often, but love all four of those guys. But I guarantee two of those guys are going to break your hearts. You just don't really know which two it's going to be. Simon P, what do you make of Dre Jameson? He is having himself a hell of a year so far. Small sample, but what do you see long term for him? Starter, reliever, and then when do you think he can be up? I love Dre Jameson. Little known fact, Dre Jameson is a RotoWire subscriber. So shouts to Dre Jameson. I doubt he's listening to this, but love Dre Jameson. He couldn't be off to a better start this year. He's back at Double A where he finished last year, but just big time stuff. Missing bats. He's not walking guys. He's getting ground balls. I think he's a starter. Took me a while to kind of come around to that. I thought initially when he was drafted that he was going to be a reliever. But I'm fully on board with Dre Jameson being a starter long term. I think he's still pretty underrated, and I think he could be up later this summer, maybe like July, August, something like that, as long as he stays healthy. Nick Durazo, what's with Nick Gonzalez's ridiculous K rate? It's not that much higher than it was at high A. I think it's like 33%, and he was 27% last year. And he's walking a ton, so he might just be too passive right now. With Gonzalez, I kind of want to see where those rates stabilize in a month or two. He would not be a top 20 prospect for me if I were updating my rankings today, but he might be when I update him at the end of May. So we'll see. Cherlila, Dustin Harris and Evan Carter with the Rangers. Fuck yeah, or better wait and see. let's wait and see. As I said earlier, I mean, Dustin Harris, really didn't see him striking out as much as he is at Double A. It's not like time to really, really panic, but obviously he's got some adjustments to make there. That's still a big jump from High A to Double A. And then Evan Carter, he's still not getting a power in games, but he's showing a lot of leadoff hitter qualities. He's got the speed, he's got the patience. He's not striking out a ton, but he is kind of just slash and dashing, dumping singles into the opposite field. So we'll see if he kind of evolves into a guy that can do it all, or if he's just going to be a leadoff type. But pretty good start for Carter at High A. Dan Odell, at what point in a season does a slow start have meaning? And then he lists Luis Matos, Anthony Volpe, Reginald Preciado. Do you have any concerns with any top 100 guys this quickly, or do you hold that they will all get it going? And I was curious of any indicators you look at. Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, like strikeouts and walks, how challenging was the assignment? With Preciado is just such a clear case of the gap between complex ball right now and single A. And that's what makes, you know, what James Wood and Brady House are doing so impressive. What Preciado's doing, like, he's overmatched. He's simply overmatched right now at single A. When you have a strikeout rate in the mid 40s, that's an indicator that I look for. This has meaning with Preciado. Like I said, he's a drop in some leagues. Volpe, Matos, I'm not really worried about. I don't really see anything in the underlying metrics to be super worried about with Matos. Volpe, let's check back in like a month. I'm not loving it, there's a reason why I don't do an update to these rankings until late May. And honestly, I probably wouldn't do an update to them until late June if I could get away with it. But I know you guys need that update, and I got to start working on draft stuff. So that's the update. Will be right before Memorial Day. Savages in the box wants to know, who is Paul McIntosh, and should we be paying attention to him now? McIntosh is a catcher in the Marlins org, and Craig Mish actually mentioned him to me off air after our podcast a couple weeks ago. The Marlins really think they found something in him. And his numbers at Double A are just crazy. It sucks that he's a catcher, but proximity is there, production is there. It's probably time to add Paul McIntosh in serious dynasty leagues, even though he is a catcher. James Hanna, what's your opinion on Dylan Bundy? Do you think he is for real? I did not start Dylan Bundy in a lot of leagues this week against the Rays. I kind of just want to see. I'm a little worried. I mean, the velocity is at an all-time low for him, under 9 mph average on the fastball. So if he can handle the Rays start, I can't even remember when that is, but I do have Bundy in a few leagues. The Twins seem to kind of know what they're doing with pitching. So that's something to keep an eye on. But I'm treading carefully with Bundy right now. Buddy Dave McDonald, he says, I just want to know who looks like they're ready to produce in the MLB this year. Who should I keep an eye on? So obviously, like, the obvious names, right? Like O'Neill Cruz, Grayson Rodriguez, those guys. But Tristan Casas, Vinny Pasquantino, and Cal Mitchell on the hitting side. I think you look at what those guys are doing. You look at the potential opportunity at the big league level. All could make an impact this year. And then on the pitching side, some sort of more under the radar guys, Caleb Killian with the Cubs, Kyle Bradish with the Orioles, who I talked about earlier on the pod. Those guys could be productive this year. Notorious DAD, Luis Garcia is tearing it up at AAA. If prospect eligible, where would he slot? And how about Isaac Paredes as well? I feel like we disregard young players once they hit their 130 ABs, even if they're the same age or younger than other prospect eligible guys. Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I think they'd both be kind of towards the back of the top 100. I was never a big Isaac Paredes guy, but something has kind of clicked for him, I think, this year. I think the Rays went after him in that Austin Meadows trade for a reason. I think initially I thought it was just kind of a, we got to get off of this Meadows arbitration money, give us the draft pick, let us play Josh Lowe. But I think there was sort of a method to Paredes being in that deal, and he's been great at AAA. And I mean, Luis Garcia has proven, dating back to last year, that he is a good hitter at AAA, a really good hitter. It's just, when are the Nationals going to let him play every day in the big leagues? Hopefully it's soon. It's going to be tougher for Paredes to crack that Rays lineup on an everyday basis. But yeah, they're both off to great starts, and we should not forget about those guys. Dom Hernandez, how much does Pete Crow Armstrong move up your rankings with your next update? He seems like a good James Anderson guy. Any good comps that you can think of? Yeah, I mean, Crow Armstrong is right up my alley. I loved him in the draft. I think I got him actually in the Prospects Live mock draft when I was drafting as the Brewers, if I'm not mistaken. But I mean, he's honestly, if you look at the tools, he's not that different from Robert Hassel. I think it's, you know, both guys are good defensive outfielders that people thought were sort of hit over power, plus speed. And I love these types of guys where people think the power is the worst tool, even though I don't think it's going to be a bad tool. Like, I think Crow Armstrong is going to grow into 20 homer power, and he is then kind of a true five tool guy at that point. So, you know, we'll see where he's going to be, right? Because he's going to have more plate appearances between now and the next update than he has in his entire pro career. So I don't want to say he's going to be top 25 or top 40 or something like that. We'll see when we get there, but Crow Armstrong is definitely my type of prospect. Hamiltron, could Corbin Carroll hit his way to a midseason call-up? Maybe. I don't really see the Diamondbacks going that route. I think they're going to want to give other guys opportunities. They know Corbin Carroll is going to be great for them. I think that they are going to set him up for potentially making the team out of spring training next year. Hamilton also wants to know if Orelvis Martinez is Joey Gallo 2.0 without the walks. I mean, Orelvis Martinez is just my, like, there's a handful of these guys where I just, no matter where I rank them, I regret it on the next update. So I've just been kind of all over the place with Martinez, but I've always been worried about the hit tool. The power is not debatable. I don't think he's going to be that bad in terms of making contact and batting average as Joey Gallo. But I do think he, like, when you watch Orelvis Martinez hit a home run, it's incredibly impressive. But I do think the hit tool is going to be a bit of a weakness for him. And then Hamiltron also wanted to know, is Jordan Walker have too much swing and miss to become an uber prospect? I don't think so. Jordan Walker got about as aggressive an assignment as you could get. I think is he still 19? He's either 20 or 19, but I know he got to high A last year. I thought it was a no-brainer that they would send him back to high A, just given his age and how he performed at high A. They sent him to double A, and he's doing fine. I mean, he's striking out a quarter of the time, but that jump from high A to double A is massive, and he's been really productive. Is he going to be a guy that strikes out a decent amount? Yeah, I think he probably will be, but I mean, he could be just a total monster in four categories in fantasy. So I think Jordan Walker is on the rise, actually. Matt, with respect to a dynasty minor league draft, would you aim for younger prospects with a higher ceiling? And then he cites Daniel Espino and Francisco Alvarez, or players that are more major league ready, i.e. Matt Brash or Joe Ryan. You know, I think you got to kind of mix it up a little bit there. Just kind of, which I'm trying not to, I don't think you want to necessarily reach on prospects in that type of draft, right? There's going to be a prospect who falls further than they should. Sometimes it's a guy who's close to big league ready. Sometimes it's not. I think maybe a mix is kind of the answer there, but I don't think you want to just go into a minor league draft and be like, I'm just taking guys that are close to the majors, or I'm just chasing upside. I think you want to have a bit of a blend there. And really just, you know, I know it's easy for me to say, but like guys that you believe in, whether they have a high ceiling or whether they're close to the majors, like think about the prospect and then think about the ETA and stuff like that. Let's see. Dandy Chiggins. I've seen Matthew Liberatore compared to Cole Hamels. Do you see him as that type? If not, who would you comp him to? I spent a couple hours prepping for this pod, and I just didn't have time to prep for all these questions, but that seems like a stretch to me. I mean, Cole Hamels is just a really, really great success story of a pitching prospect kind of living up to the hype. Liberatore's off to a pretty good start at AAA. I don't have a great comp for him off the top of my head. You know, big lefty with a good slider. The rest of the pitches are maybe not quite plus, but good command so far. Good org to come up in. I think we do see Liberatore this year. And I think he's good enough at enough stuff where he could be a guy that has success as a rookie. Aaron Bennett, what are my thoughts on Cade Cavalli's rough start this year? Cavalli, it's common. He's got the big stuff, and he can look electric, but he struggles with consistency, struggles with command. Yeah, I mean, he's trending down a little bit for me. Reminds me a little bit of like, I don't know how many of you remember like Archie Bradley back when he was an uber pitching prospect, like a top 20 prospect in baseball. I think some places had him even as like the number one overall pitching prospect in baseball at some point. And the command just was never there for him to be a starter. The consistency was never there. I don't want to say that that's the way Cavalli is going to go, but I would have thought he would. I would have thought he would have had a better big league spring training than he did, and I would have thought he would have gotten off to a better start at AAA than he has. So, trending down a little bit. Ben Pernick, are you concerned about MJ Melendez's rough start given his struggles prior to 2021? Not really. I probably ranked him a little bit too high on the last update, but I don't see like sort of red flag numbers in his profile thus far. I think he's pretty bummed to not make the team out of spring training. He's a real thoughtful guy. And I know he's kind of trying out some other positions defensively. So I think there's a lot of factors at play here. I think Melendez will snap out of this, and I think he'll be fine. Matt Mason, is Roybert Salinas with Atlanta a legitimate prospect? Salinas has pretty awesome stuff. Big fastball, really nice breaking ball. He's off to a really nice start at single A. I do have some concerns about the body. It's kind of a Brewster Gratterall type of frame where he's carrying too much weight, I think, right now. And sometimes that'll lead to like back issues. My main concern right now is just his physique. I think he needs to get in better shape. I think that'll be good for his health. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being strong and able to handle a big workload, but you don't want to be overweight because that can lead to some health issues. And it's not he's carrying too much weight for his frame. Like I don't think of Alek Manoah, for instance, as a guy who's carrying too much weight for his frame. Alek Manoah is just a massive human being who's always going to carry a ton of weight. Like CeCe Sabathia, sort of the same thing. Just genetically, like CeCe Sabathia and Alek Manoah weren't going to be super skinny pitchers no matter what they did with their bodies. And they could handle that weight. But I think Roybert Salinas could easily lose 20 or 30 pounds. Peter Mullenkamp, he wants me to kind of give a new Reds top 10 prospects, excluding Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo. Didn't really have time to do that, but I will say, like, a lot of teams would happily trade their top two position player prospects for Matt McClain and Ellie De La Cruz. I think that's a really exciting 1-2 on the position player side. As I said earlier, Nick Lodolo is the real deal. I think trade for Nick Lodolo in any league. And he's got a starting Coors Field, so maybe even wait till after the Coors start and maybe you can buy him a little lower, but I also wouldn't put it past Nick Lodolo to handle the Coors start. So that's a nice situation there. But yeah, I mean, the Reds really lack depth in their system. There's a handful of guys you can get excited about, but it's just like the prospects like 10 through 20 in the Reds system, just not very exciting. So they've got some work ahead of them. Hasn't been a very well-run franchise over the past past couple decades. But that's going to do it. Really appreciate all the questions. And I'll be back next week with a guest. I'm going to be on vacation in Savannah, Georgia this upcoming week. So might not be great at responding to questions on Twitter and stuff like that from Sunday through Wednesday, but I'll have another pod for you on Wednesday. And then, like I said, I'll be making an article out of this podcast, the questions and the answers and stuff like that. That should be up on the site tomorrow. Appreciate y'all tuning in. This has been the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, and I'll be back next week.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.